now to the eighth case, Anson versus United Armored Services. Mr. Anderson?
Seems to be an Anderson tag team here. This is a case that you could call the bag case. The man was fired because he wrote down drop zone bag when he actually did not have a bag. But to understand this, we have to understand the nature of the job. His job was an ATM technician. What he did was he went to the center of his zone, called his dispatcher, checked in. He then sat there until he was given an assignment. When he got an assignment, he went to that location, fixed that ATM, called in again, I'm finished, what do I do next? And he sat there, or he went back to the center of the zone, and he'd sit there until he got another assignment. At the end of the day, he would go to the center of the zone, he'd call his dispatcher and say, is it okay, I'm done for the day, and he'd get the okay from the dispatcher. That's what he did. He was paid to sit in his car most of the time and do nothing, because he would stand by whenever an ATM went
down. Did he ever work for a Maytag? I remember some great ads on the Maytag.
He should. It sounds like a great job if you have a very low boredom level.
Yeah.
But that's what he did.
Did he read a lot? I mean,
I don't know what he did, but he must have. Fred, he's quite an intelligent fellow. Has more degrees than I'd care to have. But he got into problems at the company because he didn't like being called Latka, Nosebushka, dumb foreigner, or immigrant. And being somewhat intelligent, he responded to all these in writing. And he incurred the wrath of his direct supervisors by going over their head and talking to the president and the board of directors about this. Well, that was basically the end of his ability to get promoted in this company. When he applied for promotion, it was denied. He got upset. He filed an EEOC complaint saying, they've done all this thing to me. They're denying me because of my national origin. Well, after that, it got worse. He was then set up with one of the banks where he was supposed to bring a letter before he went there. He didn't know anything about it, got in trouble. They then said, okay, you're fired. As he was walking out, another guy said, wait, you're not fired, come back. So everything's okay, we'll go ahead. He then he was suffering from depression. He was then required to bring in a doctor's note. Wasn't required under anything written. He was the only one singled out. And then they decided to do an investigation because he wrote drop zone bag on his driver's sheet. The record shows that the procedure for the zone bag changed in February of that year. It was no longer needed. Now, there's conflicting testimony by the defendant on whether somebody needed the zone bag or didn't need the zone bag. Mr. Antonson's affidavits are clear that the zone bag was not needed for the first shift, because, of course, all the ATMs are open during the day. There's not a problem. He also, in his affidavit, he had his own set of keys anyway. Didn't need it. The idea that he had taken something from the company is misstated. He was paid to do nothing. He could sit anywhere and do nothing until he got a call from his dispatcher. He was never paid for mileage, contrary to the assertion of the defendant. He had to, in fact, reimburse the company, because it's a company car, for personal mileage. If you take all these factors and put them in one hat, we believe that the district court basically took whatever the defendant said as truth, ignored the undisputed facts of Mr. Anderson and the contested issues of whether writing drop zone bag had anything to do with anything that the company realistically needed him to do. He was never criticized for his ability to do his job throughout his entire tenure. All he did was object when he was called these names and he was not considered for promotion, and they made up things that made him do that other people didn't have to do. And we believe that the district court's grant of summary judgment should be reversed.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Morrison?
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is John P. Morrison. I represent United Armored Services. Plaintiff's briefs make clear that he is limiting this claim to his discharge in August 1999 in retaliation for having filed a discrimination charge 15 months earlier in May of 1998. His appellate briefs solely focus on McDonnell Douglas analysis. They don't touch pretext, or excuse me, they do not touch direct evidence, and they proceed directly to pretext. He did not brief, and he has therefore waived whether the district court properly made the finding that he could not make out a prima facie case of discrimination. Now, whether this court utilizes the prima facie case utilized by the district court, which required causation, or that relied upon by this court, and that was determined 1 week later in Stone versus City of Indianapolis Public Utilities Division, the result is the same. He can't make out a prima facie case. The district court determined that 15 months between the protected activity and the termination was far too long to establish causation, especially because nothing else was shown that would impugn the motivation of the decision maker, Rick Salo. Under Stone, the plaintiff must show as his prima facie case under McDonald, quote, after filing the charge, only he and not any other similarly situated employee did not file a charge, was subjected to an adverse employment action, even though he was performing his job in a satisfactory manner. Now here, Rick Salo terminated two other employees within the year before Mr. Antonsen was terminated for the same reason. And he did so again with a third employee within months later. So he can't make out a prima facie case under the Stone theory. Every time Mr. Salo faced a similar situation, he discharged the people. Let's go to pretext. If we were to consider pretext, you have to look into Mr. Salo's motivation and integrity. And as I mentioned, they're unimpugned. There's nothing in the statement of facts before the district court that even suggests Mr. Salo was aware of the charge before the EEOC. There's nothing suggests that Mr. Salo's reasons for doing this wasn't the real reason, either that it was a lie or that it was an insufficient reason to make the discharge decision. The facts are that on this July 22nd, Mr. Salo personally observed the kiosk where Mr. Antonsen was supposed to end his day and turn in a key bag. Now, Mr. Antonsen apparently feels he didn't need a key bag because much of the time he probably didn't, because he did have his own keys. But our rules, and there's nothing in the record that shows that there was a change of procedure, our rules are you have to pick up the key bag is located in the middle of your zone so that you can engage in rapid response to a problem, so you're not driving all over in case you don't have the key. There are situations during the day when the keys are necessary and the technician isn't carrying the keys. There may be alarms, there may be kiosks that are locked, there may be other bank facilities that are locked. So Mr. Salo observed for a two-hour span on this day that Mr. Antonsen wasn't there. When the timesheets and the driver sheets came in at the end of the week, remember Mr. Antonsen worked remotely, so you have to trust him. This job involved, our whole company involved, safeguarding other people's money. Mr. Antonsen has a job where he is required to drive around and fix the machines that hold this money. Truth and honesty are absolutely essential components of this job. In any event, Mr. Antonsen writes on his timesheet at 4:45 p.m., drop-off bag at 5200 North Harlem. So, he wasn't there to drop off the bag. He doesn't dispute now that he wasn't there. When he was asked at his termination meeting, were you there? If you wrote drop off bag on your driver's sheet, does that mean you were there to drop off something? And he said yes. His post hoc excuse that does not even pass the sniff test is that drop off bag is some sort of keyword or code for end of the day. It doesn't make sense. It has no basis in logic or semantics. Mr. Antonsen's revisionistic view is just wrong. It contradicts his prior admission at the termination meeting, and it just makes no difference anyway. What matters here is what was in Mr. Salo's mind. Mr. Salo was the decision maker. It if Mr. Antonsen was telling the truth and he, in his own mind, felt that a bag wasn't necessary and felt that dropping off bag was some sort of code for end of the day, that's fine, but it doesn't make Mr. Salo's action discriminatory. You have to look into the mind of Mr. Salo and determine whether this is pretextual. Well, it's clear that Mr. Salo believed that falsifying timesheets and driver sheets are a legitimate reason for termination. He's done that with four other employees, he had done that with two other employees previously and one subsequently. None of those other three employees had complained about discrimination. It's also clear that Mr. Salo actually believed that Mr. Antonsen did what he was accused of doing. In fact, Mr. Antonsen admits that he did exactly what he's accused of doing, and that is not writing down on his time or writing down on his timesheet he was at a certain location to drop off a bag, when in fact he didn't have the bag and he wasn't at that location. This is the job, safeguarding people's money. We have the right to have people be honest about it. There's nothing that suggests that Mr. Salo had any improper motive. With that, I would rest.
Thank you, Mr.
Glad to answer any questions. Thank you.
Mr. Anderson?
One of the items that he said is, Mr. Salo didn't see him. Granted, you didn't see him go on the cusp. This is a half-mile-long shopping center. Mr. Antonsen's affidavit says he was in the shopping center parking lot when he called into his dispatcher. He didn't forge any timesheets. This is not a timesheet. This is a driver sheet. It's just supposed to be where you are located when you call in and which ATMs you repair. That's all it is. The timesheets are done later, and they're done in connection with the dispatcher we complied with. And this thing about loyalty and honesty, Mr. Antonsen has never been accused of being dishonest, taking money, or forging a timesheet. This is a driver sheet. And the issue comes down to whether Mr. Antonsen is correct that the set system changed in February of 99, where nobody in the first shift used the key bags, or whether Mr. Salo and Ms. Parisi are right that everybody had to go do a useless act and go into the kiosk and get the key bag and take it with them, although they were never going to use it. The district court found in their favor, but it's a contested issue of fact, and the whole case turns on that. We believe it should be reversed, and let us go to the jury on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement as well, and that concludes the calendar for today. Court's in recess till further notice.